you go. We saw what the value of my guarantee is. It's on the display for the world to see. I guarantee the Bruins will win Game 6. What a terrible gut punch. It feels like it was a Game 7 loss. I gave so much last night, and I know I wasn't alone. There's a lot of people out there, Bruins fans, harder core Bruins fans than myself, and even a couple people in my texting circle. I will say from the show, Mitty sent me a text this morning, and he was all riled up last night, exchanged a text with me after the Bruins lost 2-1. In case you shut your TV off and you thought it was 2-0. No, it finished up 2-1. The Bruins score a goal in the last, 0.03 second of the game. And I'm sure some bettors that had Toronto -1.5 weren't too happy with that. But Mitty's text says, #not a cynic. Glass just has no water in it. And I was like, dude, it's true. At what point do you just say, I don't have any more to give? I am mentally tapped from this game last night, a Game 6 loss by the Bruins, a game that I guaranteed a Bruins win in. I'm bottomed out. I'm going to need you folks to help pick me up today. Are you able to do that? I think Thomas Polk is on the line. And Thomas, I'm requesting help from everybody. It's all hands on deck right now.
How are you doing today?
No, terrible.
Hey. Obviously, a tough one. We knew the Leafs were going to come to play. I thought if the Bruins get a couple goals, we're going to be all right. At the end of the day, that's exactly what it is. You need to score some goals. One is just not going to get it done. If we look at the first few games, right, every time the Bruins score three or more, we're winning hockey games. One is just not happening. And, hey, that's a little over 120 minutes now, including that little overtime from the Game 5. We can't put the bucket in it. That's something they got to change. They got to be able to solve a goal in the Toronto net and get some goals. That's all there is to it.
It's very concerning that not only can we not score a goal, it's that we can't even get a shot through onto net. The Bruins literally had one shot on net in the first period last night. Thomas, to your trained expert, former NHL professional eye, is there something different that Toronto is doing that Boston just hasn't made any adjustment to, and that's why we're not getting pucks on net at the beginning of these games?
Well, I think at the beginning there, if we look at the advanced stats, I'm sure if you go back and look at it, there was multiple blocked shots, missed net, that kind of stuff. Is one shot on net in the first period acceptable? Probably not, right? But they did have other chances, just wasn't counted as a shot on net. At the end of the game, it was 23-26, just not enough as a total. I feel like it's a playoff game. Yes, it was tight. Can you get close to 30? I think you get close to 30 shots on net, you have a better chance of winning those hockey games, right?
Thomas, it was crazy last night. At the end of the first period, I think the shot total was on net 13 for Toronto and 1 for the Bruins. But I was writing in my notebook, it seems kind of like we're outplaying them.
Yeah, we go back to some of the other games that they played. Toronto didn't always, keep us off the score sheet, but they kept us off the shot sheet. Like the game that we won 3-1, and I believe we only had low 20s as well. So, you know how it goes sometimes. You take the shots, it either gets blocked by one of their defensemen, misses the net by a little bit. So it's one of those things. You definitely want more shots on net, number one, but you got to find a way to score a goal. One goal, very unlikely you're going to win a hockey game. I mean, you can look at Swayman and go, well, what about the first goal? Well, if you look at the replay on the first goal, like he was square to the puck, he was ready to go. Well, it hit his defenseman in the leg and deflected it 2 feet in front of him. Like, what do you want the guy to do?
Yeah, definitely not his fault. And you can't blame McAvoy either. He's trying to block the puck.
Hey, he's trying to. It was an unfortunate bounce that seems to, in the whole series, though, when those bounces go your way, you win hockey games. Because sometimes the Bruins, in those games that we won, 4-2, 3-1, 5-1, those bounces were going our way. And they didn't in the last couple games. Hey, at the end of the day, it might be a little tough for all our Bruins fans out there to go, oh, it's Game 7. But hey, this is our chance. We have home ice. It's their chance to end it in 7 and move on to the next round. Who cares what happened last year? The way I would look at it is every time we play Toronto in Game 7, we won.
Well, I guess I like you're trying to pick me up, okay? So I appreciate that effort. Pretty solid by you, Thomas, I will admit. But remember back to Game 3, you said, hey, how games were close and the luck factor and this and that. Remember that short side goal that you said it was a minor league goal? I think we were down by a one goal in Game 3, and Trent Frederick went short side, and people said that was a soft goal. But it was kind of the luck factor. And I'm just wondering, as a newbie to this hardcore Bruins fan base, I got a text last night from one of the listeners to the show, Z-Cad, and he says, ha ha, ha ha, you must join us in our misery. There is no escape. So I have a feeling here that Bruins fans are incredibly jaded, and like, there's no hope for Game 7, I gotta tell you.
I don't think that's the truth. I mean, maybe the Bruins fans are looking at that, not everyone, as a player, looking at it from the Bruins perspective, right? They know it was going to be a battle. They know it was going to be hard. You can't go up and down. Hey, you got to take your wins and move on, but you got to do the exact same thing for your losses. You can't problem it. It is what it is. Right? You can't fix that game. They're over. They flew back home. They're here now. And we have Game 7. So looking back at the last couple of games, I mean, obviously they do and they will. I know they will. Their coaching staff, I mean, he called out his star player in Pastrnak a little bit, which I have no issue with, and I'm pretty sure Pastrnak has no issue with. We know he's their star player. And we know we need him to shine in those playoffs. Look who scored both the goals for the Leafs yesterday. Willie Nylander, right? Their star player, one of their star players in the regular season, missed the first four games of the playoffs. Came back. He played pretty well in the first game. Didn't have any goals. Now the second one, he put a couple of them in, right? Star players show up when it gets hard. And not saying Pastrnak didn't play great. Didn't play good, I should say, because he didn't play great. When Pastrnak plays great, he's on the score sheet.
Exactly.
Whether he has a couple of goals, a couple of assists, when he's great, he can put the puck in the net, and he has shown it every year, and that's why they're paying him the most money.
That's what it comes down to, is you're supposed to be the superstar. You want that type of money. You don't get paid that money for the regular season production, or maybe in this case, you do, because I think he's disappeared last year in a similar situation, and now he's here this year. Now, I'm not saying, hey, it's all his fault, but here's the deal about sports is effort is one thing, but production is the other. In Game 5, I didn't see the Bruins' effort where it needed to be. Last night, I feel like the effort was there. In fact, I thought DeBrusque was next level. I thought Lowry was next level, and McAvoy. All three of them stood out to me like, dude, these guys are playing their tails off, and they feel good. Like, there's production. There's good plays happening. With Pastrnak, he may be trying, but there's no good plays happening.
Hey, the effort level is something, I'm sorry, this is the NHL playoffs. This is something you don't need to discuss. They're all giving effort. If you're not giving effort, you shouldn't be there, right? Like, this is even when I talk to my kids about Little League soccer, Little League baseball. Like, the effort needs to be there. I don't care if you hit the ball or score a goal, but the effort needs to be there. So that, you know, like you said, star players need to shine when the pressure is the highest. And when I say pressure, like, yeah, you can look at the stats afterwards and go, well, he's played six games, he has two goals and two assists, but were those meaningful goals, right? Were those the goals that give you the 1-0, 2-0 lead? Then, yeah, you showed up. If you scored the empty netter on the 5-1, then, yeah, awesome, you got on the score sheet, but that's not what we needed. Somebody else already took care of business first.
It's pretty obvious this team needs that superstar guy. They need the leader who has the talent to finish one, to just because that, you know, is going to have a huge effect, trickle-down effect on the rest of the team.
Oh, 100%. I mean, look at it. The last game, the Leafs won 2-1 in overtime. McCabe scored his first goal. Nice rookie for them, or maybe second-year player, scored a huge goal for them. That's awesome. But you need those other games. The superstars need to show up. They need to be there. And if you look at those games when we won 5-1, 3-1, the star players showed up. Marchand had an awesome game that up there, 3 points in the 3-1 game. Well, you know, we need those guys to show up and do those. Again, this is Game 7. Whose star player can produce more? That's all there is to it.
In front of the home crowd, my man. Let's see, Thomas. I mean, it's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on Saturday. If we win, I'm still going to be happy starting out the show Monday morning. If we lose, I'm still going to be mad. So it's like, it's not just a one-day thing for me now. It's got to be the whole rest of the weekend. I'm exhausted today. If I had to play tomorrow night, I would not be ready. I'll just tell you right now. I hope the Bruins are.
I hope so, too, because if they're not, my whole bracket is done.
That's way to try to pick me up at the beginning and then again at the end. We'll try and keep it light here. Thank you very much, Thomas Polk. Have a great weekend. No matter what happens with the Bruins, I want you to have a great weekend, okay?
Thank you. You too. And they'll have a great weekend as well.
There we go. Uplifting. Let's stay with that positive line of thinking when we come back here from this commercial break on The Sports Machine with Slim, WKXL Radio, nhtalkradio.com is where you can find us usually, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Friday, I should be a lot happier than I am right now. So disturbing. I don't know what's more disturbing. The Bruins' lack of resiliency or toughness in 3-1 series advantage games or 3-2 series advantage games, or my just negativity that I'm carrying around today. I have to find a way to shed this. I hope some of the callers are going to be able to help me. We have a new caller to the show today, Dakota in Braintree. Dakota, welcome to the Sports Machine with Slim.
Hey, how you doing?
Bad.
You know, there's so much negativity out there that it's kind of ridiculous, and I like going against the grain, and I love the Game 7. I can't wait. The drama's going to be phenomenal, by the way. And, you know, I think they'll pull it out. I don't think they're going to choke like last year. There's too much talent on the Bruins side. I think they'll come to play. And the pressure's now put back on Toronto, honestly. So I'm not as concerned as everybody else, and we'll see what happens.
Dakota, you're breathing new life into me here. I can feel my spirits picking up. I will say, if I can ask you a gambling question. Yesterday, I went on actionnetwork.com to see who the public was betting. And I checked the Boston Bruins against Toronto game, and I saw 93% of the money was on the Bruins. And I went, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. That's never good. For Game 7, I don't think Bruins fans are going to be betting on the Bruins in Game 7.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And a quick betting note, last year in Game 7 against the Panthers, when the Panthers tied it up late, I went on my sports betting app, DraftKings, and I bet the Florida Panthers at that point to win the Stanley Cup at like plus 5,000, figuring that this was doom and gloom for the Bruins since they gave up that late goal that Florida was going to win it in overtime. And, man, did I have a sweat, and Florida couldn't pull it out, but it would have been great.
Yeah, that was a heck of a play. It's nice to have those futures, man. Those give you just a lot of fun all the way through. So what's going on here for you in your mind? Are you just always positive? I know that's not the case because I've heard you on other shows.
No, I mean, I'm hardly ever positive, and I'll get to my Celtics take in a little bit. But as for the Bruins, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when they were talking about the goalie rotation, there's an easy way to go into the playoffs if they were going to plan on playing both goalies. And all they had to do was say, we're starting with Swayman in game one. He plays until he loses, then you switched up to the other guy. This way you can never be second-guessed. No matter how they play, as long as you win the game, you get the next spot. And we know the Bruins aren't going to win every game. So you're going to get the goalies in there. And they wouldn't be put in this situation because right now, who are they going to put back in net for game seven? You have to go with Swayman, right? And then if they lose, everybody's going to be back on the Bruins. What the hell happened with the goalie rotation that they said was going to happen going in? So Montgomery, they better win game seven. Otherwise, it's Montgomery's head on the chopping block.
He said after last year's debacle, he said he messed up the goalie situation. And then you go into this year, you go in every other game all the time, and you should have stayed with that. Or your strategy would have worked too. But either way, Ullmark probably should have started in Game 6. Now listen, everybody listening knows Swayman's been incredible.
So, he's been awesome.
Right?
But he's been awesome. But the guys in front of you, though, right? The goalie can still be great. But if those players are going to dictate what happens in front of the goalie. And they were doing it all year long, and they were great. And again, he's screwing up the goalie rotation.
He messed with the psyche of all the players and all the fans. And I have to hold him accountable for that. I'm sorry. If Ullmark had played last night and we lost, it would just be a difference in Game 7. Like, okay, we're getting Swayman back in.
Exactly.
He watched that. He's ready to roll.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the whole key to this. The whole key. They totally. I want to get to the Celtics real quick, okay? For one, this KP injury, it's not only going to ruin the Celtics' chances in the NBA Finals if he's not healthy, but it ruins Jason Tatum. Porzingis was specifically brought in here because the organization knew that Tatum could not bring it in the NBA Finals, that he's too easy to lock down when you've got finals on the line and every player on the opposite team will just look to shut him down. So Porzingis was here to save Tatum from poo-poo himself in the finals. And now I can't wait for the drama to come in, because I'm telling you right now, if they get to the finals, I don't care who they're playing against, Tatum is going to shat himself, if I can even say that, okay? And the only way that they can win the NBA Finals without Tatum showing up is if you get the Jaylen Brown that you got against Golden State a few years back, and then Derek White steps up to be the MVP that when they got him in the trade, I said he was going to elevate these two players. And that's it. You can still win it, but don't expect Tatum to do anything, because he doesn't have that dog in him.
Well, and on top of that, Dakota, he has been the playmaker. He is probably our best playmaker, and we've been using him in that role all season long. Yeah, he can fire up a bunch of threes in games and go off a 35 or 40 every now and then, but that's not really what he's been doing this year. So for Mazzulla to get to the finals and then be like, oh, wait a minute, he's my best one-on-one player, we just got to let him go and do the thing. No, 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 it's the other guys that are going to have to do the scoring, or else we're going to lose.
So you watched the Denver game the other night? You know who took those two game-winning shots?
Jamal Murray.
Mm-hmm. Not Jokic. You know why? Because Jamal Murray has that winning DNA in him, and he can create separation from driving to the hoop. When you watch Tatum, he does not do that. He has that lack of skill set to get by someone in a situation in ISO basketball. And don't forget, it's easy when it's not in the last 2 minutes, because the referees are just going to blow the whistle. But in the NBA playoffs, they swallow the whistles, there's contact, and Tatum just doesn't want that contact, and he does a stupid fall-away three-pointer or two-pointer with his feet kicked in the air, and he did the same thing at Duke, and he's doing it now. And listen, I'm not a Tatum hater, I'm a realist. The guy just does not have it. He has unbelievable talent, but when it comes to an NBA Finals where you really need to win the championship, he will not win it as being the lead dog.
We got about a minute and change left, Dakota. I will say, one of the callers to this show, MBD, told me yesterday, says, with Jamal Murray, you watch him on those last plays of the game, he goes, he makes one move, gets to a spot, rises up straight, looking to shoot. Tatum makes the stop, start, pivot, back, forward, fake, looking to draw fouls. Oh, reverse, you know, fade away. Oh, we miss. Why can't Tatum do the same thing as Murray? Just go, I'm going to a spot, I'm rising up and shooting.
Because Tatum thinks he's better than he is. That's the problem. I would rather have a guy with Tatum's talent that thinks he's not as good as he is, because he would play harder and do more within his skill set than just think he can just take that shot anytime he wants. That's the problem with Tatum. He's always been that way. He thinks he's better than he is. Unbelievable world talent. But those people that think they're on top of the world, they're not going to be able to do it.
If he heard what you just said, do you think that would motivate him to play any harder?
No. Absolutely not. You know what? Because he doesn't care. He doesn't have the heart.
But he thinks he does. He thinks he does.
This is my point. He thinks he does. He needs to think that he doesn't and want to show everybody that what he does. But he thinks he does, so he doesn't have to try to prove anything.
The one guy we had on the team, maybe who was like in situation mentally to tell him that he didn't, was probably Marcus Smart, and we got rid of that guy.
Well, Kyrie was the same way. Everybody blamed Kyrie when he was here, but Kyrie could see it early on. Both of the Jays, he saw it. You know, and I don't know what's going to happen with Dallas, but, man, they're playing super well and connected. And P.J. Washington, that acquisition, I wish the Celtics would have got him.
Exactly.
That Dallas team, they could be reckoned with. And if that – Dallas might be the only team that if we get to the finals that, like, we have a really good chance because we can't beat Denver. I don't think we're going to beat Denver. You know, if SGA can lead OKC to it, you can probably beat them. Dallas, they can probably just beat because Luka doesn't really play too much defense, and they'll figure out how to stop him offensively. And then you've got the whole Kyrie drama. I can't wait. I love the NBA. I love the NBA playoffs, and we'll see what happens.
Nice work, Dakota. Thank you. You're welcome on the show. That's good stuff right there. This is the Sports Machine with Slim, everybody. Dakota and Braintree, he calls a lot of different shows out there. Well, not a lot, but on EEI and 98.5. He's one of their best callers, and that's why I was like, hey, man, I want you to come on the show here. What'd you think of the experience?
Thanks, man. I thought it was great. This is good. You know, I get all my takes in, and that's what's important because a lot of times I get cut off or blown up back in the day when Ordway used to be running the big show on EEI. All in good fun. I love it. I'm a diehard sports fan, and I just want to be real, not like everybody else.
Bam. Thank you very much, Dakota. We're transitioning to commercial right now. We will be back. We got some other things to you're going to want to stay tuned for here. The Kentucky Derby preview. We'll do that with MBD, and we got some more takes on the NBA and NHL playoffs. WKXL Radio is on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. We will talk to you in about 2 minutes. Lots of texts on my phone. And I just don't know what to tell you, people. That was a pretty great segment with Dakota. For those of you that are able to listen to us right now on the FM channels or AM channels, I wonder who's listening to 1450 AM. If you're out there, I just want you to know you're important too. You're special. 1450 AM. It's a channel that I don't know how many people listen to out in the wilderness, if that extends maybe up into the far reaches of northern New Hampshire and whatnot. But if you're out there listening, I appreciate your listenership. And I hope you're less than as frustrated with the Bruins' loss as I am. But I will say, Dakota picked me up a little bit there. This is what I have said for years about sports talk radio, especially with the two behemoths in the area, 98.5 and WEEI, and some of their radio announcers, the sports talk people. I love them. I listen to them. They're funny. In fact, Greg Hill and Wiggy in the morning, Curtis is funny. They make me laugh. They make me smile. I enjoy them. And they give people some time to go back and forth with. But I will say, the majority of the people that are on those stations, they just cut the callers off all the time. And that's fine if you have a guy who's just I like the Bruins fans. I've been a fan for 70 years, and I just wanted to call the station to talk about it. Like, no, okay, that guy, we're going to get off the air pretty quick. We're going to get that guy out. But if you have a qualified, good voice with a good landline that can have back and forth discussion and bring up new, different viewpoints, especially if they're somewhat controversial, like Dakota's take there on Tatum. I mean, we've all said it in our living rooms to our friends. We've all talked to each other about this. Tatum hasn't come through in the big time. Like, come on, dude. How many game winners? I know this. You know why? Because back in December, I set up a Jason Tatum game winner or tire countdown clock. When he missed that game-winning shot against, it was Golden State, I think, where we had the chance to win at the end, and he rose up and missed. But there was another game, too, where he rose up and missed. Like, he hasn't come through. And so I started that up. Well, it hasn't been reset since December. I had a bet with the pistol. He said, if he doesn't hit one by this time next year, how about, what do I have to, I forget what I have to give him. I don't remember what the bet is even, but I know if I lose, If I win, he's going to buy me a Celtics jersey, I think. But if I lose, it's something really bad. And I took the bet. And it's not going to get reset, dude. Tatum doesn't have the stones to make it happen. He hasn't been that guy. So who on the Celtics is going to? It's a great point by Dakota. It wasn't KP, though. I mean, I understand what he's saying. Just the option of running the offense through. Kristaps can catch at the free throw line, turn. And as long as he's not totally wimping out like he did in game two there versus Miami, like that goes in a large percentage of the time. It just didn't in game two, which is somewhat worrisome. And then he got hurt. But it wasn't going to be KP going for, you know, 30 points or hitting game winners. He hasn't done it in his career either. So who's going to be the guy? Jrue Holiday? Is that what we're all based on now? It's like, hey, we brought this new guy in. He's won a championship, so hopefully he can be the guy that can bail us out. Let's get the ball to Jrue. I hope he can do it because I like Jrue Holiday. I'm a fan. Derek White, can he get it done? He's the guy. Him and Peyton Pritchard, I think we would all feel like they're probably the least adverse to pressure or vulnerable to pressure. I feel like they're just basketball players. And with Peyton Pritchard, more so I feel like he's the type of dog that's like, hey, no, I want to shoot the ball at the end of the game. I want the ball. I want to be the guy. I want to take that shot. I just get that vibe from him. Now, it's easy to get that vibe from him when he never gets any opportunities to actually do it, right? He hasn't had a chance to take a game-winning shot for the Celtics. If he does, well, we'll be able to find out. And if he gets three chances and misses them all, well, then we'll know. Like, I have this feeling again. I had a feeling the Bruins are going to win game six. Wrong-o. And now I'm on the canvas. And I'm in, like, the camel clutch hold. The Iron Sheik has me in the camel clutch. And the ref isn't, like, calling the match. Even though I'm tapping. I'm like, dude, I'm all done. I want out. I'm done. And the ref is like, no. Hold him, Sheik. Hold him in the camel clutch a little bit longer. He needs some learning. I really feel like that already as the Bruins fan. And if I could go back to Mitty's text from this morning, as I just continue to ramble by myself, I will do it. But Mitty, you made me laugh, man, when I got that hashtag, not a cynic, glass just has no water in it. And it's so true. Dude, we are on empty. The Bruins had one shot in the first period last night. Is that even true? I didn't even write it in my notebook. I did. The score was 0-0. Bruins got way outshot, but I feel like they actually outplayed Toronto. Weird. Pasternak called for a double minor penalty 1 minute into the second period. Yeah, nice work, Pasternak, our best quote-unquote player. Double minor. Not only are you not doing anything good, you're doing doubly bad things. And we could say, oh, well, you know, she's trying. It's like, so what, dude? I don't care if you're trying. I'm trying to root us in from my couch. And I'm scoring as many goals as you are, Pasternak. And at least I'm not getting called for double minor penalties. I will say, from the fan base side of things, because I know so many people were thinking of this, especially if 90%+ of people were betting on the Bruins, that Lowry penalty that was not called against Mason Lowry, who I think has been phenomenal. I berated him and belittled him a little bit multiple times during the year on this show when he was falling down while skating backwards once and just not able to possess the puck, turnovers. He just looked weak out there. This dude has come in and has shown me like Bruins fans have something real to be excited about for the future. This Mason Lowry and Charlie McAvoy combination on the D end, that they're going to be absolutely phenomenal. For a long time in Bruins. So you're going to have, and I think they have the toughness that I want to root for them. The way they played McAvoy last night? Come on, dude. Did you watch him trying to shift it into gear offensively in the third period? Like, he was trying to go through guys. Nobody else could do anything on the offense. No forwards were getting it done. So McAvoy was like, I'm just going to try and do this. He was trying to play forward as a defensive player, and it almost worked multiple times. The playmaking, the hesitations, the reverse angles, boom, get it on there. He was so great. And with Lowry, he took a massive hit into the boards, a play that I definitely thought was a penalty. I meant to ask Thomas Polk about this because I don't understand how that was not called. I mean, he got slammed head first, straight on head first, into the boards. I expected the guy to be hurt. And this is part of why I like him so much, because he got up and he went on to play, and I saw no drop-off from his game whatsoever. Mason Lowry looks like an absolute stud. But I will say, in that third period there, as soon as that play happened, and there was no penalty call, because for a little bit of time, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, did they call a penalty? Is it like, wait, did Toronto touch the puck? There's no penalty called on that? What? Huh? And then they stopped the play. And Jack Edwards starts talking, and him and Brick, like, well, look at this. And they didn't come out hardcore like I would have. I'd be like, well, I don't understand these refs, dude. Like, I don't want to complain about the refs and blame them, but come on, how do you not call that? But they made a subtle comment or two, like, wait a minute, that just seems strange. Then we drop the faceoff for the next startup of play. And every Bruins fan who's been tortured, these people that Zcad are texting, he's texting me about going, let me read it to you. I read it earlier. He says, ha, 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 you must join us in our misery. There is no escape. Well, all of those fans were all going, how is that not called a penalty? Refs, are they against us? How is that not called a penalty? This is total crap. Like, and then guess what? Within like 20 seconds of that puck drop, boom, they shoot, the puck deflects off McAvoy, goes just where it needed to go in the net, and all of a sudden we're down 1-0, and all the Bruins fans are like, I knew that ref, he cost us. We were all mentally looking for the excuse for why we were going to lose, and we made it happen. The brain power of the Bruins fan cost us the game. And you can laugh and say, no, no, no. Why do you think the course of events happened just like that? McAvoy was a stud last night. You think he should be the reason why we lost? Because ultimately, dude, if he wasn't in the way of that puck, Swayman would have stopped it. Swayman was not letting in any goals last night. And if he had stopped that, we wouldn't have been down 1-0. We wouldn't have been playing so aggressively. So Toronto wouldn't have had multiple one-on-none opportunities and put in the second goal. McAvoy didn't deserve to lose that game. He deserved to win that game. Bruins fans, maybe you deserve to lose that game. Not me. The Sports Machine with Slim, WKXL Radio. Just kidding. I'm one of you. Can't escape the misery. 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. This is NHTalkRadio.com. We're coming right back with Kentucky Derby Talk. I don't know if you people heard a commercial there for the Christian Science Church, an event that they're having. A speaker will be at, I think it's a Bow Library, but Thursday, May 16th, Leslie Pitts. If you don't know this, I also host a show called the WKXL Spotlight. And if you go to our website, you'll be able to hear a taped interview that I did with Leslie Pitts and a fellow by the name of Scott McDonald about their experience within the Christian Science Church. I will just say, if you know anybody who's struggling like with physical ailments that doctors aren't able to help them with, I might suggest listening to that interview I did yesterday, or send it to them. If you have somebody old that you know has been going through problems and stuff like that, send them that interview discussion. It may just be the impetus for something where they stumble upon like self-healing. It's pretty crazy what that church seems to be able to do through the power of the mind and relationship and belief with God. So take it for what you want to take it for. I'm just telling you, it's a real good interview yesterday. A real good interview right about now with MBD. He's coming in just to talk Kentucky Derby. Is there anything you want to get off your shoulders or chest about the Bruins?
Very disappointed about the Bruins last night, but I mean, how many times are we going to talk about losses with a chance to clinch a series? I feel like at this point that conversation is pretty much played out. I want to focus on more positive things, like hoping God will give me a winner in the Kentucky Derby tomorrow.
and or the Kentucky Oaks today. Let's stick with the Derby, though, because that's the race that everybody's going to be talking about. Three-year-old championship race, essentially, is the Kentucky Derby for boys. Three-year-old boys, mostly. The females could enter, but they never do because the females have their own race that they run today, the Kentucky Oaks. So the three-year-old girls run today. Three-year-old boys come tomorrow. Where are things at, Dave? Do you just want to talk about the race, or do you want to say, hey, I got this horse that I really like that everybody should like as well?
Well, the first thing I would just say is, so this is, anybody not totally familiar with horse racing, 20 horses take the field. This is not normal in North America. Typically, the most you'll see in a gate is 12. It might move to 14 for some of the really big races, the Breeders' Cup. So when you get 20 horses in a gate, a lot of strange things can happen. That's why some long shots over the last 6 years have won this race. Longest shot on the board, maybe Rich Strike a couple years back. Won this race. You just never know what's going to happen, what trainers and jockeys want to do. So I think from a horse racing standpoint, you know, that's what makes this the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. We finally reached it for 2024 Slim. I'm happy to talk whatever. If you want long shot plays, if you want who I'm playing, you want to tell what I think are some live horses, you tell me, what do you think you're crowd wants to hear about?
I think that tomorrow, if you're watching the TV cast, you're going to see most of the discussion center around two horses. One is Fierceness, who should be the betting favorite and is going to go towards the front as the race unfolds. At the beginning of the race, Fierceness should be somewhat towards the front. The other horse that people will be talking about is Sierra Leone. That's the two horse. This horse is going to go towards the back. And what I will say is Sierra Leone had a serious gate issue the last race that it ran, where it did not want to go in the gate for about a minute and change. And in this race, when you got to load 20 young stud boys into the gate, the two goes in, and then they've got to wait for the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and at the same other time, 12 through 20 are being loaded in. So it might be a minute and a half. I would say that horse is going to have uncomfortable feelings when caged in that starting gate, so I don't want to bet the two tomorrow, Dave. That's my take on the two favorites. I probably don't want Fierceness either because I don't think he's getting to the lead.
So I think the betting public has it right. I do think Fierceness is the best horse in the race. But again, how fast is he going to have to go early to clear to the lead if he wants the lead, which I do think that horse wants the lead, right? So I think that people getting 5-2 on their money, I think that's a good ticket. I have no problem with anybody who wants to try and make 5-2. I won't take it because I like to look for some deeper plays, horses that I think are on the improvement. But if you want to play Fierceness, I'm all for it. I am totally out on Sierra Leone at this point. I do not believe that horse can win the Kentucky Derby.
And that's because, what, too many horses that you have to go through? You mentioned earlier, 12 or 14 horses you got to go through because you like to go last at the beginning. That's one thing. But now there's 20 horses. You got to go by 19 of them or so. That's just a more difficult job.
So the horse handicapper in me is I break down the races. So that horse has run four races. Twice it's run on the mud, right? And in the Derby, I've also, as a handicapper, looked at the racing weather tomorrow, and it looks like it's not going to impact the track. Of course, it could be a late change. I mean, it's still over a day away, day and a half away. There's going to be some showers maybe over the course of the day, but it doesn't look like it should impact the track. So if it's a fast track, Sierra Leone, the two, has had two races that it's won on a fast track. The thing with those two races is there was a ton of pace in front of them. Like, they were very fast races, maybe as fast as the Derby is going to be tomorrow. You know, and this horse was able to get up at the end of the race without all that congestion. I just don't believe that in this race with that much congestion and a pace that's really going to be on par with what it's already seen, that it's going to be able to get to the front by the end of the race.
I'd agree with you that there's just a lot of horses. If we start in 20, I see 5-6 of them whose game plan is to be like, hey, we want to be first or second or third going into the first turn. And when there's six horses all with that same mindset, some are going to be forced to like try to run faster than they normally do at the beginning. What do you think as far as like middle pack horses, Dave? Is that who you're settling on? Because I have to think if everybody's going for the lead, it's going to set itself up for like a closer to win the race.
Yeah, so I think that there's plenty of front speed. I do think there's going to be an honest tempo, and I think you're going to have a few horses that, like you said, are going to try and rate just off the pack. They're going to try and be in that stalking position. I mean, with 20 horses, the jockeys are just going to do the best they can to try and save as much ground as they get into that first turn. And you'd be amazed as you watch these races over the years, like those horses that find the right spot, that just get the right trip, whether you're in that second pack or that third pack, or even at the back of the pack when there's a lot of speed, like that trip matters. The jockey's going to matter tomorrow. And so I think there's a couple horses that are going to be in that, looking for that starting position, that just a touch horse from Brad Cox, I think, is going to be out there, and he's going to try and find his spot early. I think Dornock is going to find his way out there early and try to settle in. I don't think either of those horses really want the lead, but if they find it and the tempo is slow enough, maybe Fierceness doesn't get out of the gate that great out of the 17. Well, maybe they'll take it, but I don't think that they're going to be using their horse to try and get there. They have enough natural gate speed to find a good position. So I think those are two of the six horses that can actually win the race.
What horse do you think you're, you know, picking if you had one horse you had to nail down and say, I like this one to win it all?
Well, I think Fierceness is the best horse, but I'm not betting him. My bet is going to be Honor Marie. I'm going to play the 7 in that race tomorrow. I'm expecting the horse to be somewhere around 22-1, 24-1. I mean, if it gets a little more money, that'll probably be inspirational to me. I'll probably like that, because I do think that there are some wise guys that have ridden on this horse. But just to handicapping the race, this is the third race of the year for the horse. The first race was in the mud. I kind of throw that out when it has a run in 3 months. You know, it comes back with a really good effort, lost to Catching Freedom, who's going to be third choice in this race. But this horse is on the improvement. I don't really like the jockey. That's the issue. If this horse had a really good jockey, I would absolutely be betting this horse. And I think that this horse might be 6-7-1 and be one of the two or three favorites. It's going to be a price because of the jockey. But I think in a race like this, I'm going to take my chance on a horse that I think is really good. I love the breeding on it. I was a big fan of the sire. And so for me, it's just logical. Like, yeah, I'm going to do it just like last year with Mage. I'm going to make my play on a long shot and hope that I get the right race.
And as I said on the show yesterday, the birthday for Honor Marie, the 7 horse running on Saturday in the Kentucky Derby, the birthday was May 4th, 2021, and the Kentucky Derby will be held on its birthday.
It will, and listen, sometimes that matters. You're going to notice that some of these horses were born in February and March, right? So they are a couple of months older, and these are younger horses. They're still maturing, so sometimes that couple of months can matter in a race like this. That's why, I mean, that's also part of the reason I think you see some of these other horses looking a little bit better than others. If you watch racing every year, some of these, as they mature, they get later into the year, and then especially their four-year-old season. The form does not always stack up to what it did at the race at the time of the Kentucky Derby.
So with Honor Marie there tomorrow, or what do you think from an odd standpoint? It's 20-1 morning line. The jockey is Ben Curtis, for people out there that don't know much about horse racing. I do know plenty about horse racing. I've never heard of Ben Curtis tomorrow. So the jockey of the 7, Honor Marie, the fact that I don't know who the jockey is means can't be that great. And when you have 20 horses and a pilot trying to navigate in and around horses, it's kind of important to have like the best guy out there. Do you know Ben Curtis at all, Dave?
I don't really. Only the statistics that you're able to pull off the page. You know, he's a 16% winner, which, man, that's, you know, I mean, depending on your track, that might be good. That might not be that good. So I did watch his last race. I don't like the way that the jockey ran him in the last race. I'm actually going to hope that they just really weren't trying to burn the horse out. I thought that last race they could have done better with it. So that's why I'm going to take my chance.
Nice job, Dave. That's the best we can do. What I would say is if it's Ben Curtis's birthday tomorrow too, then I would definitely like the 7. So we might want to look that up on Wikipedia. Everybody, do your best to have a great weekend. Tomorrow's going to be a not-so kind of day and night. Boston Bruins, oh my God, pick me up off the canvas. Thank you to the callers today. The Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. Just breathe. Just breathe.